Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnaston, and this is episode 21. I see you in the darkness, I see you in light. I see your eyes shining in through the night. Welcome to this podcast. It's now 4:15 on Friday the 15th of June. So the race is just over a week away as I record this. Hopefully this will get out by Saturday night or Sunday, and you'll be able to listen to it. So it will be less than a week by the time you hear this. But basically very, very close, the final week of the race. I was hoping to have a final interview. I've been trying to line up a few people, maybe going to try and do it over Skype, but it's not quite worked out. So I'm afraid we're going to have to do that after the race and with various folks. And also I'd love to get some interviews with people who've run the race this year. So not quite sure how many weeks I'll keep going with the podcasts, but we'll see what I can do. Maybe I'll just do it once a month or something over the next few months. But we'll see. I won't promise anything. I'll just see how that goes. Basically, this podcast, I've got a few things which I thought would be of interest, hopefully, that in that final week before you run the race. First of all, we've got Zilka's post, my favourite blog post of the week. Zilka's a good friend who I've known for a number of years, and has been interested in following Zilka as she supported Thomas. And then over the last year, she's made the decision to do the race herself, and she's written a lovely blog post just talking about her aim for next week and wanting to claim that goblet for herself. So hopefully you'll enjoy that as much as I did. And then, as with most people in the West Highland Way Race family, we were all really, really chuffed and very proud of Debs when she won the Grand Union Canal Race a couple of weekends ago. And again, she's written a lovely blog post, a race report, which is well worth reading. But I thought instead of me reading it, I asked Debs whether she'd read it for herself. So you don't have to listen to my tones. Debs has read that herself. Zilka's lasts about 5 minutes. And then Debs's race report lasts about 25 minutes. And then she followed it up with another really interesting post, which is basically lessons learned. And I've asked whether she will read that as well. So that's hopefully going to come tonight. And then I can add that in as well. And I think that will probably, the race report takes about 25 minutes, and I imagine the lessons learned another 5 or 6 minutes or so after that. And then I thought it would be helpful, on the Friday night at 12:30, there is a race briefing, so everyone is registered by then, and then we'll gather together, and Ian will give a little welcome, and encourage everybody as they set off, and then Sean will do his race briefing. And we thought it's quite difficult to take all that in, and sometimes support crews are not actually there, because if there's two support crews, only one support crew's there, so it's quite helpful for everyone to hear that. So I will put that on the website probably Tuesday, Wednesday next week, so you'll be able to read it. But also I thought, well, I'll read that out, so if anyone listening to the podcast can get a couple of times to hear it and then to read it before the Friday night. There may be one or two things that are slightly different on the Friday, but I thought this would be a good start. And then finally, and by certainly not least, we've got episode 2 of Day of Waterman's Pyranical Tramblings. And this one is all about pre-race nerves, and again, well worth listening to. And that's about 6 minutes at the end of the podcast. But before any of those things, I thought I would just share a few things about the last week and the race night itself. I say the race is just over a week away, and I think the key thing in this next week is don't do anything silly. Don't trip over anything, don't hurt yourself, try and keep away as much as possible from anyone who's got colds. Try and sleep as much as you can, try and rest as much as you can, and your aim is to try and get to that start line at 1 o'clock on the 23rd of June as rested and as ready as possible for the race. Make sure that you give time to get all your kit ready. Make sure you get time to buy the food that you need, that you've got your lists. Hopefully you've met with your support crew by now, or you will do before the race, so they're all clear what you're aiming to do. You've got rough ideas of times, and make sure that they realize that you could be up to half an hour, an hour either side of that if things are going well or not so well. And make sure everyone knows what they're doing and that you are as ready as you can be for the race. If you're going to run at all between now and the race, then just once or twice, very easy. Again, that's a very personal preference and people will do different things. But you're certainly not going to do any advantage in doing a hard run between now and the race. And if anything, you'll just take that edge away rather than add to the edge. So key thing is this last week, don't do anything silly and make sure you arrive at the start line as ready as possible. I think the Friday is a difficult day for everybody. One of the tough things about the West Highland Way race is that it starts at 1 o'clock in the morning. So that's what you do. Do you try and sleep during the day? Do you do a normal day? And then you've got to start a race when you should be in bed and sleeping. I can only tell you what I've tried to do, and I'll share that. Basically, I've taken the Friday off from work, which again I know is not possible for teachers and other folks who it's not possible to take the day off. But if you can take it off, then I've tended to get up probably normal time, use the morning just to get all my gear ready, make sure all my food's ready, all in boxes and everything's ready, have some pasta for lunch or whatever, and then go back to bed in the afternoon. And I try and rest, sleep for 2 or 3 hours from about sort of 2-ish or till about 1:30-ish till about 4:30, 5:30. I don't think I've ever slept well, but I've slept and I've dozed off and I've certainly rested. Sometimes I've even got those things that go around your eyes when you're on the plane so that try and block out a bit of light and try and sleep as much as possible. And then when I get up about 4:30, 5:30, try and convince myself that it's a new day and I've started a new day and it's breakfast. I haven't had breakfast, but certainly tried to get that feeling of starting the day. Decent meal at sort of 5:30, 6:30. Spend the evening resting as much as possible and then head down to Mulgai. Leave here about 11. I live in Paisley, so it's only half an hour away. But whatever you do on that Friday, try and keep off your feet as much as possible. If you do have to teach, and just try and sit down as much as possible. If you're on a job where that you have to do physical work, then see if you can do as little as you can on that day and try and rest, because the more rested you are, the more chance you've got to be able to really do well on the race. I've just got a few thoughts for the night. I remember the very first time I did the West Highland Way race. I remember I left here about 11, got down to Mulgai about 11:30, and I was just as high as a kite. I remember someone describing that to me like I was a kid in a sweet shop, and I was. I'd been thinking about this race for the last 9 months. It had dominated my thoughts, and I was just so excited to be there, and I couldn't wait to get going. And I was chatting to everybody, and I was high-fiving people, and I was chatting about the race, and I was going round. And I, looking back, I wasted a lot of nervous energy. And by the time the race started, I was, you know, almost not physically but mentally exhausted, because I was just on a buzzing and on a bit of a high. And then in the subsequent years, I've tried to be a bit more mellow, and I've tried to just do my own thing. Yeah, obviously you want to greet people, particularly those that you've trained with, those that you know well. But I've tried to keep myself a bit more to myself and not waste as much nervous energy. Again, different people have different ways of getting ready for the race. But I think generally, I've talked to other people as well, and some people have got down there about, say, 10 o'clock and have stayed there. So they register at 10 o'clock and then they just standing around, sitting around, waiting. That's a long time. That's 3 hours to wait before the race actually starts. I would suggest, I'm not sure if the registration marshals would be as keen on this, but I would suggest either two things. Either get there between 9 and 10 and register early. The registration opens from 9 o'clock, And then, if possible, if you have a room, if you've got your support team have got some accommodation, then go back and spend 2 or 3 hours resting. So if you register, say, at 9:15, you could go back for 3 hours back to your room and have a bit of a rest, get some last food if you wanted to, and then make sure you're back to the registration or the car park for 12:30 in time for the race briefing, and then the race pretty well starts straight after that. If, like myself, you were travelling to Mulgai and then just in the car, I would suggest going a little bit later. You've got until 12:00 to register, so I've often got there at 11:30, and there's plenty of time to be able to register and get yourself ready. And then if it takes you, say, 20 minutes, half an hour to register, you've only got 30 minutes so then before the race briefing, and after the race briefing, you're literally pretty well the race is starting. So my suggestion would be to arrive either early and register and then go away and have a rest, or if you're going to go straight there, arrive after 11:00, and so then you don't have so much time. I reckon the worst time to arrive is around about 10:00 and then to stay, because it's a long time before the race actually starts, and that's where you're more likely to waste that nervous energy. But no doubt, lots of people won't listen to that and will be there between 10:30 and 10:30, and that's perfectly fine. And everyone can do their own thing. And that's one of the great things about ultra running. There's lots of different ways of doing it. Just a few thoughts that I had about the race as you set off. First of all, I think a key thing is don't try anything new on the race. Hopefully by now you've got all your kit, the shoes you're going to wear, the socks you're going to wear, the shorts you're going to wear, whether you're wearing skins or not, what you're wearing on top, whether it's you've got two layers if the weather's cold or whatever it is, your head torch is all sorted, you've got ideas of whether you're going to wear gloves or not through the night, and you've got them planned if it depends what the weather's like. But everything needs to be tested, and don't try anything new. You might hear someone else saying, oh, I've tried this or I've got that, and you think, oh, yeah, let me try that. But if you've not tested it on at least a 20-30 mile run, I don't think it's worth doing, because you just don't know how it's going to affect. It might be okay for a 5 mile run, but a new rucksack or a bum bag or whatever you're going to wear is difficult. And on that, make sure that you only carry enough that you need. If the weather's good and you don't have to carry waterproof, then don't. You've only got to get to Drimmen or to Balmahar before you see your support crew. And so only take enough that you need. Pointless carrying 2 litres of water if you're going to see your support crew at Drimmen, which is only a couple of hours away. And you can certainly get by with 30 bottles of water through the night to there. So just be careful. Don't carry more than you need to, because it makes a massive difference. I think one of the key things I would say as well is be as disciplined as possible. You should have an idea of what you're aiming for. Hopefully you've got a bronze, silver and a gold medal goal, and you've got an idea of what time you want to be at Drimmen, whether it's 1:45 or whether it's 2 hours or whether it's 2:15, and try and be as disciplined as possible to get there within that time. If you're 10, 15, 20 minutes earlier than you should be, then you might well suffer later on. Might well be that you're going to go great and you're 10 or 15 minutes ahead of every checkpoint, and that would be superb. But that's the exception rather than the rule, I would say. So try and be as disciplined as possible, and make sure that you start off nice and steady. You should be able to chat away, and it should be really comfortable. You should be able to get to 30, 40 miles without it really hurting. And then it's that you start to pick up from there onwards. My next point is to remember that your mind gives up way before your body. So I think we've all got to find a way to keep going. Your mind may be as early as Balmahar, maybe as late as Kinlochleven, whatever, but at some point in the race, your mind will tell you, this is tough, this is really, really tough. And your mind is saying that your body has got its limits. You've done very well to get to 80 miles, but you need to stop now because I'm going to start shutting things down. Whereas in actual fact, physically, you can still go a lot, lot longer. And I think we've all got to find a way of almost tricking our mind to get through those tough bits, whether it's counting your steps or your breaths, whether it's a mantra, whether it's following Duncan Watson's advice and think happy thoughts. Maybe it's remembering why you're doing the race and why you took up this challenge in the first place, and know that if you give up now, then you're only going to have to come back next year anyway, so you might as well keep going. Whether it's visualising the finish and what it will be like to get to Fort William and hit those doors at the leisure centre, whether it's visualising the Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon prize giving, and going up and getting your prize goblet for completing the West Harlem Way and putting it on pride of place in your on your mantelpiece in your house. Whatever it is, you need to find a way to be able to keep going, because you're physically, you'll be able to, you can do more than your body will let you. Maybe you've got to walk for a while and just get through that tough bit, and you will get through it. I remember the very first time I ran on the West Harlem Way with Ian Beattie, and Ian said to me that often in runs you get to a point where you think you couldn't run another mile, and then later on you get going again, and I just couldn't imagine how that was possible, but it is. I remember 2 years ago I got to Bridge of Orkey, 60 miles, and I was absolutely in a bad way, and I thought I couldn't run anymore, and I thought I was going to have to walk the last 35 miles. But I had a longer rest at Bridge of Orkey. I had an ice cream, I had a hot chocolate, I had something a bit different. And then I did get going again, and I was able to finish pretty strongly. So it happens. And as I said, you just need to find a way to get through those tough bits. So there's just a few thoughts from myself. Finally, I just want to just wish everybody that you have a great race. It's an amazing race to be involved in. There is a real sense of family. I hope that you support one another along the route and everybody has a great time. You'll find that you'll make friends that will last for a lifetime over this weekend, because there's nothing like a shared experience to really get that support together. So I hope you have a great race. It'd be great if as many as possible can complete the journey. Looking back over the race, it's not always the case, and there are people, for whatever reason, injury and various reasons, do have to stop. And I hope you'll come back and complete it another day. But it'd be great for as many as possible to be able to complete the journey and run from Mulgai to Fort William within the 35 hours. Just want to say finally, my role, I'm really looking forward to the race this year. I've run the race the last 5 years, so this will be the first time since I've been involved in the race that I won't be running. And it does feel very strange, just a week away and not tapering and not getting ready for the race. My big race is 6 weeks away. I'll be doing the Lakeland 100 race. So I'm still in training and getting ready for that one. So it'd be fun to be involved in the race in a different way. My role this year is to be the race control, which means that I'll be working with Ian and Sean and making sure that everyone is accounted for. Myself and Ian will be looking after Balmahar checkpoint once we've done the start. So we'll see everybody through Balmahar. And then what I'm really hoping to do this year is to be able to keep the website up to date. So once all the splits have gone from Balmahar, I'm going to go to Oak Tree where there's Wi-Fi and hopefully update the website with everyone's results into Balmahar. And then myself and my friend David, we're going to drive up to Benglass and get as many splits there. And then we're going to base ourselves at, by the way, at Tyndrum. Kirsty's very kindly said we can use her living room and her Wi-Fi and be able to update as many results from there, and different checkpoints we'll keep phoning in and we'll keep up to date. And then we'll make our way up to the finish, probably stopping at Auchtertier and Glencoe on the way to get some splits, and the rest will be phoned in. So hopefully people who are following the race will be able to see some data of how your race is going. So if you have friends who would like to, family who would like to follow the race, then encourage them to get onto the website, and there will be a link there to the results, as I'll try and update them as the race goes along. And also, I know a lot of people like using Twitter, and if you can use the hashtag WHWRace and any comments, and that will be fun as well, just for support teams, and even some runners might want to tweet as they go along, and so that people can follow as well, and that will give a picture for people following the race of how it's all going. So hopefully that will be mine, and I say I'm looking forward to seeing everybody on the race day, and I know a number of you and others I've corresponded with, so I'm looking forward to putting some faces to names, and it'll be an interesting race for me as well, sort of watching it rather than running it. So hope you enjoy this final podcast. As I said, you've got Silke, then Debs, then Sean's race briefing, and finally Dave's ramblings. So enjoy.
Make me feel like I belong. Don't leave me, you won't leave me here alone.
My favorite blog post of the week is from Silke, and you can find her blog at blog-zilke.blogspot.co.uk, and this post was put on her website on Sunday the 10th of June 2012, and it's entitled Goblet, I'm Coming to Get You. In 2 weeks today I'll be on my way to the prize giving to collect my goblet. That's what I dream about anyway, and what I am busy visualizing. And visualizing is such an important part of preparing yourself, I hear. So that's what I am and will be doing for the next 2 weeks. I can see myself at various points of the route, the checkpoints, the meeting points, but with my crew. I can see myself running through Tyndrum and on towards Bridge of Orkney. And I can see myself eventually on the last few miles down into Fort William, approaching the finish. My training has gone very well, and all credit goes to Thomas. He has been a superb coach, keeping me calm when I wanted to panic, when the legs felt like lead, especially during weekday runs after work or when other things got in the way of running. We had a general plan with higher mileage weeks penciled in or scheduled around other events such as the Fantastic Fling, but the motto was to listen to my body and adjust the plan accordingly, week by week, to ensure enough recovery between my runs. And so most of my long runs were very enjoyable. I did quite a few of my own, and then others in various company, the last one being the West Island Way on Bute last Saturday. This coincided with the Jubilee weekend, which I was using as a last high mileage weekend. It started off with 29 miles on Bute. These were a bit harder than expected due to the terrain, so the next 2 days were changed with a rest day thrown in. Then I wanted to do Mulgai to Balmaha in West Harlem Way race pace to ensure I was not getting too close to the cut-off time at Balmaha if I took it easy. So all in all, I managed to cover 85 miles in 6 days, my highest mileage yet. And now the taper has truly started. Yeah! Long lines and lazy afternoons at home to get the all-important support crew lists and my other details typed up and ready for my support crew meeting next week. In fact, since Thomas has been given an additional spot in my support crew, he has taken it on to configure lists and schedules that previously were only in my head. I don't think I would have bothered with too many schedules, but as we kept arguing about what and when who of my support crew was doing, even though I explained it to him, he came close to being banned. I guess he had had it really easy for the past years, just me and Nancy. If the schedule said he would arrive at 10:28, then that's when he would arrive, give or take 5 minutes. Well, be prepared for improvising team. I am very glad, though, that he is not running himself, as I am not sure how we would have survived race week with two of us getting ready for it. And now Thomas can concentrate 100% on me, and if he thinks I am unreasonable, I just need to remind him how he used to be during the weeks before the race, and he keeps dumb. I am getting excited about the race, and I know I will be very nervous in the days leading up to it. My biggest worry now is to catch some stupid viral infection off a patient, or anyone else for that matter, and I am seriously thinking of working with a face mask and gloves, but I guess that would really scare people off. I love those kids that want to show you how bad their cough is, and before you know it, they have coughed right into your face and over your desk. My crew will be briefed next week, with Nancy and Katrina doing the first shift up to Ork the Tyre. Thomas will join them on Saturday morning and meet me at Bogle Glen, and will be there until the end. From Auchtertyre or Tyndrum, depending on my arrival time, Yvonne and Heather will take over with Thomas as backup, as they have never supported before at the West Harlem Way Race. Katrina will then join me later again in for the last stages after having a rest in the B&B in Fort William. They are all ready for it, and I hope I can do them proud and put in a good performance. It feels like such a luxury to have everyone just looking after me. We have an added bonus of raising money for our Ardgowan Hospice, Greenock, and already I have had so many people supporting this great cause. So many well wishes and people wanting updates on the day. It is quite overwhelming, but I'm sure a great motivation to keep going when it gets tough. And after Debbie's adventure in the canal, even a fall into Loch Lomond would not count as an excuse to stop. I think I am as ready as I can be. For me, it is a great adventure, a bit like an expedition covering two nights to get to your summit. It will be a journey that I can't wait to start. I will share it with some of you at some points, and I am sure at other times I will be on my own, concentrating on my own pace and the way ahead. But in the end, we will all meet in Fort William to collect our goblets. What a moment that will be.
Hi there, this is Debbie Kinsani, and I'm going to tell you all about my Grand Union Canal race, which I did at the beginning of the month. John Kynaston has asked me to read out my blog report. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the West Highland Way race, but I guess John's running out of material now that everyone's in taper stroke panic mode. So this is my tale straight from my blog. The Grand Union Canal website summary stated: Garscoe Harriers Debbie Martin-Kinsani wins a triple crown this Jubilee weekend, first finisher, first lady, and the recipient of the Steve Phillips Run for Your Life trophy, awarded to the first-time finisher, in a new ladies' record time of 28 hours and 1 minute. And this is the report. As the nation was enjoying the holiday weekend and hundreds and thousands of her heading to London to join in the Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations, 97 hopefuls lined up at the Gas Street Basin in Birmingham with the aim of running 145 miles on the Grand Union Canal to the Big Smoke within the 45-hour time limit. As you can imagine, it's not for the faint-hearted, and in reality, 50% of the field won't make it. Most people, even hardened ultra runners, didn't share my enthusiasm for the adventure. Even up until last year, I would never have put myself forward as a candidate. The analytical and thought-provoking Andy Cole commented on my last post that this race might cure my towpath-related fetish. After running 24 hours round a central reservation last September, this was going to be an absolute joy. The first time I'd stepped foot on the Grand Union Canal was Friday evening, when Sonic and I wandered down to the checkout to check out the location of the race start. I should point out at this point that Sonic is actually Marco and his blog name is Sonic. I wasn't fazed by the distance, but I had concerns about my lack of course knowledge and being alone in the dark with a map. Until I looked at the map on the back of the race sweatshirt, I didn't even know what towns I was passing through. My three points of reference were Birmingham, Milton Keynes and London, and not much in between. At 6 a.m. on Saturday, June the 2nd, we were off. As with usual races, it attracts a mixed bag of runners and abilities. The forecast was for full-on heavy rain, so most were donned in waterproof hats and gloves. You could easily spot the Scottish bird in the midst in only shorts and vest. There was going to be a full range of shoe options too. There was road, trail, hoka and a few speedsters and lightweights. Pre-race, this had sparked a debate on Facebook. I'd opted for hokas with the hope that it was just the southern softies who deemed towpath as off-road running. During the first section to Catherine DeBars, I ran with James, a race first-timer, father of two, and soon-to-be Olympic torchbearer. We were later joined by Steve, an ultra-veteran who had been participating since the early 90s. I joked that he'd probably invented the sport. He was a self-confessed old-school style runner and dropped Don Ritchie into conversation a few times. The miles zipped by, and it wasn't long before Sonic was on hand to top up supplies. He told me I was third female and I left the support point on my own. The race strategy. My three main goals were to finish, being bronze, sub 30 hours, silver, and to break the ladies' record, which would be my gold. Overall, to get my gold, I needed to average between 11 and 11:30 minute miling. I know I love a good even-paced race, but with even with the best intentions, there was no way I was going to run that pace in the early sections. For me, over such a distance, there was always going to be a natural deterioration in pace. I think that's only human. It's really the speed and the extent to which deterioration happens. There were no specific tactics, I just wanted to relax and just keep chipping away at the miles. The competition. My main competitor was Emily Gelder. I ran with her. Well, I say I ran with her when she was lapping me at the 24-hour race in September. She's amazingly talented and I had her down as a surefire win. I wasn't there to challenge anyone, I was there to challenge myself. I never chased and if anyone was chasing me, I wasn't aware. The support points. There were 47 recognised support points in the race, probably a lot more if you know the route. I'd arranged to meet Sonic every 8 to 10 miles. For the first 70 miles of the race, each runner is giving a support point according to their race number, green for odd and yellow for even. This is to ease the congestions at the early stages of the race. I would love to give you a mile-by-mile breakdown, which I'm sure you'd love, love, love to hear about, but it's all very vague. I could tell you who I passed, as in I could describe what they looked like, but I'm not even sure when it happened. I know I was picking my way through, running approximately 9:30-minute miling, and the second lady was not that far in front when I met Sonic at mile 20. At the tunnel, I stopped to check the map, and a chap called Cliff went past me. Super, I had someone to follow. We chatted for an hour or so. Well, he chatted mostly. He could certainly give the gibbering midget a run for her money. Mind you, he did have a fairly impressive resume of ultra races under his belt. After we passed the second lady, I let Cliff push on as the pace was at the upper end of easy for me. I'll spare you the graphics, but my stomach was really playing up and it was a bit stop-start for the next 10 miles. I phoned ahead and asked Sonic to mix up some resolve for me meeting up at 30 miles, or it could have been 40 miles. When I got there, he told me I'd moved up to 11th position. Then I was in 10th as someone retired as I was leaving. I caught up with a Belgian runner called Wouter. He said he'd been struggling from the off and he didn't look like he was having a great time. He wasn't going to give in to a female passing him either, so we played leapfrog for an hour or so. I wanted to ask if he was wearing girl shorts because they were verging on criminal, but clearly he wasn't in the mood for joking. He wasn't in the mood for chatting either, which was a shame because I was. It was great having him around for a short while as he was clearly more familiar with the map than I was. Anyway, we parted company as the route veers away from the canal at 45 miles. I think I was about 50 miles in when I came to a confusing junction. Sonic was going to meet me there, somewhere in the vicinity, so I thought I'd best check. In hindsight, this is probably a bit ridiculous, but when I shouted to a rather chunky man steering a canal boat, "Excuse me, is this the way to London?" I shouldn't have been surprised when his response was, "London? F off." Thankfully, a kind lady popped her head out from another canal boat and told me I was going the right way, wished me luck in the race. The absurdity of the situation did make me laugh though. The course. It's gorgeous. I was really impressed with how scenic it was, and it's a house spotter's paradise, which pleased me as I love a good nosy at other people's houses. The terrain is really varied, but I would say about 80% of it is on trail or grass. The race rules, they're pretty simple. Numbers must be visible at all times. Runners must carry a phone, the maps provided, and an emergency blanket during the hours of darkness. Competitors must reach the checkpoints by the closing time and leave within 40 minutes of arriving. This is basically to encourage people to keep moving and not pull out at support points. There's no poles, and buddies are allowed after 65 miles, and with most races, if you retire, you have to let someone know. The Jubilee celebrations. It was a great weekend to have the race. I could always say I ran to London for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee celebrations. There was a real party atmosphere along the canal, with lots of barges decorated in Union Jack, people in fancy dress, family outings and waterside barbecues. Sonic was keeping me posted of where I was in the race. To me, it was too early to bother, but I know he loves the analytical, tactical side to racing. He did keep a note of all the things, how things were panning out, but unfortunately he didn't tell me and I threw out with all the rubbish after the race. So this is all from memory. Sonic informed me I was closing the gap on Emily Gelder and was in 8th position when I met him at mile 45. I passed through the Heart of England checkpoint at 53 miles and then caught up with a walking Cliff. Cliff was who I was running with earlier on in the race. He was struggling with man flu. He said he was going to push on, but calling it a day at Navigational Bridge, which is about 70 miles in. He wished me well and shouted that Emily was only a few minutes ahead. It wasn't long before I saw Emily with her crew. She was standing off course eating jelly babies and I stopped to see how she was. She was having issues with a sciatic nerve but was going to keep going. We exchanged niceties, as ultra runners do, and I moved on to meet Sonic at our next meeting place. Even I wanted to greet him with high fives as I'd moved up to 4th position, first female. It was still too early to get excited though, as I'd barely made a dent in the distance. Prior to the 100k mark at Blythesworth Tunnel, I'd passed Darrell, who was hobbling with quad issues. I joked about a Facebook comment he'd mentioned about wearing DS racers. We made past more pleasantries and I moved into 3rd place. Sonic had met me prior to the route deviating off the canal and was going to direct me the 2 miles along to where the canal rejoins. Thanks to Drew for videoing this bit. A bit about the kit. I wore my Hoka. The only problem was when the towpath sloped, having the extra height played havoc with my ankles. I started in a pair of shorts but changed into long skins at 65 miles as I couldn't take any more nettle stings and overgrown flora. I had the new range of lightweight and gingy socks on, which I'd ordered from the States. I love these socks, but when your feet are wet, nothing is going to save them. Ignorance is bliss, though, so there was no changing socks until I got to the end of the race. My next focus was to get to Navigation Bridge, which is 70 miles. This is billed as halfway, the halfway point, but only if you're rubbish at maths. The organiser had relaxed the support ban at this point, and it wasn't long before Sonic appeared. Sonic is pretty good on support, only because he's such a high-maintenance runner himself. So he ran towards me to take my food and drink orders. The number 2, Bruce Moore, was sitting down at the bridge. I was in and out as fast as possible. The marshal was hanging over the bridge, out of ear and eyeshot of number 2, mouthing, you're second," which made me chuckle. I kept chipping away at the miles, with my next treat being to call my mum at 8:30 to say goodnight to my boy. I was about 80-odd miles down at this point, and it was strange having a conversation about only having 65 miles to go. Speaking to Cairn gave me a wee boost as he told me about his day out. He'd been on a bus, had ice cream, seen some boats and indulged in his favourite pastime of throwing stones in water. A top day out in the life and times of a 3-year-old. I couldn't believe how quickly the hours were flying by. Of course, this is generally down to feeling quite good and absolutely loving the race. It got dark shortly after 9:30. Sonic had informed me that Cliff was having a second wind, had a support runner and was closing in on me. He was also seriously concerned about my lack of coherence, mentioning that I was acting like I'd been drinking. Hand on heart, I thought I was fine. But then again, I always think, I'm fine when I've been drinking too. I don't make secrets of the fact I'm not comfortable in the dark, ever. Running in a strange place in the dark freaks me out somewhat. The hours of darkness were a bit of a mishmash for me. I was a bit highly strung and went traipsing through thick grass. I was running alongside a canal, but I was never quite sure it was the right canal. I lost a bit of time faffing about with maps and dealing with my emotions. My legs were great, but my head was all over the place. The combination of slowing pace and torrential rain meant my body temperature was dropping. It's quite eerie being out there alone. especially when four burly men appeared with their 10-stone Rottweiler. To be honest, they were lovely, and they seemed genuinely concerned about my safety. I called Sonic to see if he could come out and meet me with layers, waterproofs and gloves. When I saw two head torches bobbing behind me, I knew it was Cliff and his support runner, Matt. I think it would be the only time I'll ever be happy to be caught in a race. We chatted for a bit, and Cliff was going to the 100-mile checkpoint to pick up another runner, Richard Galbraith, who I know from West Anglia training runs and races. It's a small world, isn't it? Sonic appeared, threw some clothes on me and directed me around the tricky bit to the next checkpoint. I was so glad he was there as my brain wouldn't have coped with the directions. I also swapped garments at this point as I was to run 100 miles before my battery ran out and then take Sonic's Garmin. I had to stop to sort out my race number and pick up some supplies and the boys were off. I was alone again, frantically trying to keep sight of their head torches. Now this is where it all goes ridiculously wrong. There's a few bridges to cross over over the next few miles. In daylight, the directions are quite intuitive, but in darkness, paranoia sets in. It was pouring, I mean torrential, which means all I could see was the headlight with sheets of rain. The path was completely flooded, so I was using the concrete path alongside the barges to run on. And then I tripped over a barge ring whilst looking at the map. Now, what's the worst thing that can happen when you're running along a canal and your emotions are running high? Yep, you got it. I fell in. And not just a paddle. I mean a full body submersion. It all happened so quickly, and before I knew it, I was wading about in the water, in the dark, trying to find a water bottle that had popped out of my belt. Ironically, someone had mentioned earlier in the race about someone who'd fallen in twice during the Thames race, and in my head I couldn't stop thinking, what a haha, how much did that come back and sting me in the ass? Of course, when I went for my mid-race swim, my iPhone and iPod came with me. Oh joy. I was out of the water as quickly as I got in a blind panic tried to call Sonic on the wet phone. Not surprisingly, it wasn't playing ball, and all Sonic was heard was gurgling water before it switched off. I started running again, trying to rationalise the situation. Really, I was just as wet as I was before I got in the water, and as long as I kept moving, I wouldn't freeze. I made the decision there and then that I wasn't going to tell Sonic about my mishap. It was just a silly accident, and I thought he would use it as, and that, with the scattiness earlier, to pull me from the race. A while later, it could have been minutes or an hour, I saw a head torch bobbing towards me and then Sonic shrieking my name. He was quite frantic when he got to me as he'd been trying to call me and thought I was either face down in the water or raped and face down in the water or something. I may have made noises to suggest that was a ludicrous suggestion and made this excuse that my phone got soaked in the rain. I moved on and managed to get myself in a tizzy trying to find bridge number 139. I kept moving to a dead end at a bridge that was numbered 153. If I'd half a brain at that point, I would have realised that the sequence of bridges that followed was 154 and 155, and therefore the map that I had was marked wrong. It took a bit of toing and froing before the penny dropped. Of course, everything comes in threes. Oh yes, there's more. After falling in the canal, I managed to fall splat out three times after that. I really needed to keep my wits about me, but I'd left my wits somewhere in the hours of daylight. Plus, with wearing Hoka, if you don't pick up your feet properly, you trip. Thankfully, I was falling onto dry land, though. On the third tumble, I managed to crack the screen of Sonic's Garmin. So far, I was an iPod, an iPhone, and a Garmin down. If anything, the expense was the best incentive to keep me from DNFing. I decided to change clothes as the cold was wearing me down. I kept my shoes and socks on but stripped off and piled on top layers. In hindsight, the ensembler was an absolute travesty. Black and pink skins, a grey Montane long sleeve, a blue West Helmet jacket and a maroon Montane waterproof. But just having dry clothes and gloves made a massive difference. Around 1 a.m. Sonic came out to meet me at the range meeting point to tell me I'd just about to overtake Richard Quinnell, who'd been leading the race the whole way. It wasn't until I saw the race pictures that I realised I ran with Richard in a 24-hour race, but it was dark and we probably weren't in our chattiest anyway. Richard at this point had moved into second as Cliff was leading the lead. He didn't look in a great way, reduced to shuffling, and I felt quite bad running past him. An hour later, say around 2 a.m., Sonny informed me that Cliff had pulled out and I was in the lead. After passing Cliff walking at the 50-mile mark, I was surprised he'd picked it back up. He lives near the course, and when I heard he stopped in his house to pick up some clothes, the story was that when he got there, his house had been broken into, and then I heard he'd locked himself out and had to break in. So I don't really know what the story was. As it got nearer 4 a.m, I was willing it to get light again. I saw Sonic's head torch and then heard a familiar voice say hello. I recognised the voice instantly as belonging to the gorgeous Gillian, who along with brother Sonic had driven up from Bournemouth. They had been watching the race unfold and decided to make the trip as a surprise. I don't know who was more delighted to see them. I think it was probably a bit more of a relief to Sonic, as my Mr. Bean's holiday antics were about to tip him over. Brother Sonic was going to run the next 5 miles with me until it got light. It was a huge weight off my shoulders when Sonic took the maps off me and handed them to Paul. Paul even offered to carry my bottle belt for me, but that was already come part of my DNA and it might unbalance me. We moved on. Although I was adopting a walk-jog strategy, I was still moving quite strongly and was still in high spirits. It was so nice to have someone to talk to, other than the imaginary people I'd been seeing along the way. So far, I'd seen a fisherman who turned out to be a tree, and a couple of little fat ladies in red coats who were in fact dog waste bins. My nutrition and hydration strategy. I would say my eating was better than usual, but Sonic might disagree. On the Friday evening, we'd gone to Asda and I stocked up on all the usual rubbish, two of everything, just to be sure. I drank mostly energy drink with water with noon and some nourishment milkshakes. I was saving my beloved flat coke for later in the race, but even then I only took a couple of small bottles. Eating wise, I had a few sandwiches, some fudge, sweets, banana, and I think that's probably about it. Surprisingly, for me, I had about 10 gels. Usually I save these for emergencies, but I bought the water-based SIS Go gels and they went down fairly easy. At the 120-mile checkpoint, with a mere marathon to go, Sonic joined me for the next 5 miles. I used the opportunity to confess about my midnight swim. In the cold light of day, this was quite humorous, and so he mocked me for a few miles. For the next 10 miles, I played a bit of fartlek. I would walk for a bit and then run to the next tree, bridge, anything I could spot in the distance. And this got me through to Bell's Bridge, is where I turned off the Grand Union Canal and started heading towards Paddington. I saw the sign for 13 miles to go and started working out times in my head. My night antics and my walk-jog strategy had slowed me down somewhat, but I was still feeling pretty good and my legs were fine. Tired, but not sore at all. I had well over 2 hours to do a half marathon. Fine in normal circumstances, but not so great after 25 hours of running. If I wanted to break the record, I needed to up the ante. But it was like someone had switched on the light and I just kept going. I heard Adrian's thoughts say to me, "If you want something bad enough, you'll find a way," like he said to me in Clandudno. Sonic and Gillian were waiting at the final point. Sonic had clearly woken up and looked a bit bleary-eyed as I started past. Even the poor marshal had to dart out of his van to come and get my number. I was on a mission. I needed to get to Little Venice by 28 hours and 11 minutes to break the ladies' record. In my head, I was flying, but in reality, I was probably doing about 10-minute milings. I was practically tapping the screen of the garment as I thought that I'd really broken it in the tumble. I didn't know what the final distance was. Although the race info states 145 miles, this is the distance on the water. With 13 miles to go, I added it up to nearly 149 miles, but I was now using the towpath signs as a countdown. I never really knew how far behind the next runner was. We were just using hearsay. I just presumed it was a male runner and, let's be honest, hell hath no fury like a man being chicked. As it was normal morning time, the path was getting busier with dog walkers, cyclists and runners. I just hoped they could see my race number and not think I'd escaped from an institution. As the countdown signs for Paddington were getting closer, I could see lines of barges. Of course, I knew it was Little Venice, but I'd stopped a runner to ask just to be sure, even though there's nothing more irritating than being stopped mid-zone to give directions. As I was nearing the finish, I couldn't see anyone and I started to panic. I just seemed to keep going. Then I saw a small gathering in the distance and hoped it wasn't another hallucination. I crossed the line in 28 hours and 1 minute, breaking the women's record by 11 minutes. I think I did the last 13 miles in about 2 hours 12, 2 hours 15, which could possibly be my biggest athletic achievement to date. I was absolutely, utterly and completely over the moon. Even now, I still can't believe it. I'm not disillusioned enough not to accept that the outright win was down to choosing a good year to race. But for now, the ladies' record is mine. Dick Kern, race director, seemed just as pleased as me. Dick is a bit of a character, let's just say. When I told a previous race finisher that I was going to enter Dick's race, his top tip was, don't ask Dick any silly questions. Actually, don't ask him any questions at all. He doesn't take fools gladly, and he certainly doesn't mince his words. Let's just say I now know that he's a big softie. Don't worry, Dick, your secret's safe with me. Thank you very, very much to Sonic for being so top-notch on support. As usual, he was outstanding. Sorry for the mild panics, though. Oh, and for breaking your Garmin, although I'm still not buying you a 910 XT. Thanks to Paul and Gillian for the surprise addition to my crew of one. Words can't describe how much it meant to me. I will be eternally grateful to you all. When I got back home on Monday, my mum and my sister had organised a welcoming party. They were so chuffed they didn't even say anything when I demolished a whole tray of sandwiches before the lunch was even ready. So a week later, it took me longer to write the story than it did to run, and all is well. My legs are okay, apart from some bruises and scratching, but my feet are a riot. Being wet for the best part of a day with all the gravel that accumulated, my feet are a bit of a car crash. It was an amazing experience and I loved being part of the race. I might be back though, because Sonic said if I won, he was going to go and do it next year, and that wasn't an hallucination. So that's it, the Grand Union Canal, 145 miles. So good luck to everyone running the West Highland Way. I will be out on the course at some point, so I hope to see lots of you and cheer you on. Thanks for listening. Bye.
You touch me with your spirit. Touch me with your heart.
The West Highland Way race is just over a week away, and I thought one of the things that might be helpful on this podcast would be to read out Sean's race briefing on the Friday night. Basically, Ian and Sean will gather everyone together in the car park around about 12:30, and we'll give a final briefing and a welcome and encouragement just before the race starts. And I know it's often quite difficult to hear that. I know I found it difficult in the past to hear all that's going on. So I'm actually going to put this on the website so you'll be able to read it for yourself as well. Probably do that by next Tuesday or Wednesday. But I thought also it might be worth putting it on the podcast so people can at least listen to it before the race, and so it won't be a surprise. There may be obviously one or two things that might change, particularly if there's any things about the route which need to be given a last minute briefing on, but again, if there is, we will try and get that on the website before the event, but inevitably there might be things that will be mentioned on the evening briefing. But anyway, here's Sean's briefing, and this will give you a chance to just familiarise yourself with that before the race. West Highland Way Race 2012 race night brief. My objective over the whole weekend is quite simple, to see as many as possible of you reach the finish at the Leisure Centre in Fort Williams safely. All rules are here to ensure that the event is as safe as possible. Failing to comply reduces your safety margin. As you may already be aware, over the years we have had one or two close calls. Please do not drop any litter on the trail. Other people do, so if you can face it, please collect some of it and leave it at a checkpoint for disposal. I would want the participants in this event to be known as more likely to gather litter than to drop it. Route issues. Balmaha checkpoint. We are going to have a funnel this year to try make sure that we get everybody's split time. So just make sure that you go through the white stakes. It'll be just before the car park so that we get everyone's time. Policing. Kit inspections will again be enforced this year, and there's a real possibility that I might have to withdraw someone from the race because either they are not prepared with sufficient gear in their transport at the time, or that their team transport arrangements do not provide sufficient cover. All runners must carry a foil blanket throughout the event. In the latter stages, it is likely that you will be expected to carry a full set of weather gear. Don't argue, just do it. Everyone else will be. After the first checkpoint at Balmahar, it is a long haul to Orc de Tir before you meet your crew again. They may meet you at Rawadanan if you wish, instead of using a drop bag there. After that, they have an opportunity to rest before meeting you at Orc de Tir Farm some hours later. Please respect other users at Orc de Tir and try not to park there for extended periods. Drop bags: Rawadanan, Invernessade, Ben Glass Farm, Llandovera. If you have not done yet, see me. No feed stops allowed in Glen Falloch. No parking at Ben Glass Farm. Closure of checkpoints. I know how much of yourself you have put into training for this running event. The closure times have been carefully set after many years of experience. If you can't make the closing time, it is unlikely that you will be able to finish safely, so the marshals will be enforcing closing times at their checkpoints. Support crews are responsible for the health and safety of their runner at all times and must be prepared to escort or retrieve their runner during the latter stages of the race, particularly in bad weather. Support crews must get their runner weighed at Orc de Tir and again at Kinloch Leven. Weight is only one factor in determining the relative health of a runner. No one will be withdrawn simply because they have lost a couple of kilos. Always obey the instructions of a marshal. Withdrawal. If you are forced to pull up, please make sure that you and your crew inform marshals that you have withdrawn. Ideally, give us the wrist tag as a physical reminder that you are out. Go forward to the next checkpoint, as the one behind you may already have closed. Please uphold the West Harlem Way race family tradition. Take care of each other. This is very important on such a long and remote route. First aid locations. At all checkpoints, race doctor with aid station at Kinloch Leven. Medics at sites on final parts of the route and at the finish. Any problems, get in touch with me direct, via any marshal or through race control. Both medic and search and rescue teams will be in the field throughout the event to provide rapid response if required. A&E. Nearest accident and emergency facilities are at the Royal Alexandria Hospital across the Clyde in Paisley and the Belford Hospital in Fort William, well signposted on the main A82 road. In the unlikely event of the race being cancelled due to extreme weather conditions, the checkpoint marshals and sweepers will advise runners and their support teams, and their instructions must be followed. There will be a Lantern Rouge sweep at the back of the field. Their instructions do not include carrying downed runners to the next checkpoint. They are there simply to summon your crew to come and drag you out. Please remove rings, as swollen hands can be a surprisingly big problem. Weather. There will be some. When the sun shines, it'll be hot. When it's raining, it'll be cold and wet. If it's windy, there'll be less midges. Food stops for supporters. The obvious spots are Orc de Tir Farm, the Real Food Cafe at Tyndrum, and Glen Coast Ski Resort, and also the Oak Tree at Balmahar, all of whom support this event. Please feel free to use them. There is a pub with food and chip shop open on Saturday evening in Kinloch Leven. Prize giving will be in the Nevis Centre in Fort William around 12 o'clock on Sunday, north of the railway station and Morrison's supermarket. See you there. Have a good one. Sean Stone, Lord of the Bridge.
As I sit here in front of the sound recorder and prepare to witter on for my Waterman's Piratical Ramblings podcast number 2, it's just over a week to go until the West Island Way race. A quick check of the forum or of the Facebook group shows that the usual queries regarding what shoes to wear, what food to eat, and whether Mike Mason really is safely ensconced somewhere in Eastern Europe and not likely to offend runners' sensibilities by being discovered performing like a bear in the woods, have all given way to one subject: pre-race nerves. I believe I can probably claim West Island Way race veteran status now, this being my 7th year of involvement, and this makes me able to comment with some authority on the subject of pre-race nerves. 7 years. That's longer than I served in the British Army. It's longer than it took me to study for a degree with the Oakham University. It's longer than my second marriage. And it's longer than the Jeremy Kyle show's been on the air. Although, to be fair, it feels like it's been around forever. And proof positive that I'm not as much of a lowlife as some people might suggest. Because despite me being the sole cause of the collapse in house prices in my area, Jezza still hasn't gotten round to sending me an invitation for his show. Anyway, I don't think there's any reason for me being subject to another paternity test anytime soon, so we'll forget about Jezza Kyle and refocus our thoughts on pre-race nerves. Pre-race nerves. I've never really suffered from them. I had a discussion with Lane McLean the other day about why this might be. I proffered the musing that as a former soldier and current serving firefighter, my life has been touched by all manner of critical incidents, and I've been first-hand witness to the vagaries of human existence. But she pointed out that it's got nothing at all to do with that, and the reason is far simpler. Maybe that I'm an arse. Anyway, my 50% failure rate in the race is probably an indicator that a lack of pre-race nerves is not such a good thing, and possibly that I really am an arse. To stand on the start line of the West Island Way race with your main fault being whether your projected timings mean you'll pass through Kinloch Leven while the tail race in is still serving is definitely not normal. So, if you're one of the many that's listening to this while your sleep is being interrupted by cold fear, or that the starting gun sound of a backfiring car as you're all in a tiz, try to see those nerves as a good thing. Use those nerves wisely to ensure your last minute preparations are all taken care of, that your support crew is fully briefed and are aware that their role in this could be the make or break for their runner. Use those nerves to do as the Caledonian based Aussie Keith Cornbeef Hughes has suggested and make sure you're familiar with the route and imagine yourself passing through the various stages. History demonstrates that even those with a reasonable knowledge of the area have been known to take the wrong turn, and I knew it wouldn't be long before Mike Mason got another mention here. Use those nerves wisely and they'll make you sharp on the day. Of course, for the first time in 7 years, I won't be joining you on the start line of the West Island Way race, so you might argue that this is all very easy for me to say. But I've got many friends that will be in Mulgay on the 23rd of June that day, dressed like malnourished Maxwell, and I'll mention just two of them right now. The first is Big David Ross from Straven. David's a lovely fella, but he's the size of a Kodiak bear, and the last person you'd like to meet in the role of door person when you're giving it large in a nightclub. Despite his intimidating physicality, Big David is more nervous than a gerbil in a gay bar, so at the very least, if you too are this nervous, at least you know you're not alone. The second is Martin Antoninus Horatio Hooper, the paratrooper. Martin's nervousness has been indicated by the fact that he was happy for his lovely wife to post a pre-race picture of him on Facebook. Now, the nature of this focal medium means that it's impossible for me to show you this picture, so I'll have to describe it. It shows our Kent-based hero, Martin, limbering up in a position he seems to have acquired from a ballerina. Now note well, this is probably the only time you'll ever hear the words Martin Hooper and ballerina in the same sentence. In this picture, he's dressed in running garb that seems to be inspired by Batman. And he's pouting like a post-operative Leslie Ash at midnight on New Year's Eve. So if you feel really nervous on the day, just before the race, and in need of some light relief, come on over, have a gander at mine, and then you'll be chuckling all the way to Fort William. This is Waterman's Piratical Ramblings, signing off before the big day, and wishing everyone, organisers, marshals, support crews, and especially runners, the very best of luck. Laters.
Thank you for listening to the 21st episode of the West Highland Way Race podcast. We've been doing these pretty well weekly since January, and built up quite a library now of recordings with interviews and favourite blog posts and lessons learned and various other things. And hopefully after the race next weekend, we'll have some post-race interviews as well about how different people's races have gone. And hopefully some folks might be able to read their race reports out and send them to me, and I can put them on the subsequent podcast as well. So finally, once again, I hope everyone has a great race. Wish everybody a really good journey, both the runners and the support crew. And a special thank you to all those who are organising the race, from the race committee, Ian, Sean, Adrian and myself. And also all the many, many volunteers who are prepared to give up their whole weekend to support the race and to make sure the race runs safely. And that's true of all the medical staff as well, all the mountain rescue and the support teams that Sean has in place to make sure that the race is run as safely as possible. That includes Dr. Chris Ellis at Kinlochleven as well. So see you all next weekend. Look forward to meeting everyone on Friday night at Mulgai, and then from 1 o'clock on Saturday the 23rd of June 2012 as this tremendous race starts. So see you all then, and bye for now. And remember, slow and steady wins the race.